Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
The typical, typical, disgusting display.
Is this legal?
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie, the Sulk, and
I love
JC.
It. I wasn't here.
Moving on.
I have to go bathroom.
I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
You're terrible at what you're paid to do.
The yellow compass way they do things here.
Saturday, March 24th, 1984.
Well, JC, first of all, press that first joke of the day button because
wow.
You just did it.
First joke of the day.
Oh, that was great. We may have to play that as the outro, obviously.
Okay,
that was awesome.
I won't talk over it.
Oh, no, that was great.
Was
even the talking was funny. Yeah, we have no legal right to do that. But yeah, come get us, Simple Minds. What are you going to do?
They will.
No, they won't. They're hiding in Scotland somewhere. By the way, so welcome to another episode of A Typical Disgusting Display, a podcast for writers by writers who hate writing. And as you may have figured out already today, we're going to be talking about The Breakfast Club. So JC,
woo!
Thank you for putting together that awesome
course.
Intro. And
yeah.
Of course, that song, Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds, is now kind of regarded as the anthem of the 80s. And an interesting thing in reading a lot of trivia about The Breakfast Club, nobody wanted to sing that song.
I know.
So many people passed on it. It was like Billy Idol and The Pretenders
yeah.
and a bunch of people. But as it happened at the time, Chrissy Hynde, who's lead singer of The Pretenders, was married to the lead singer of Simple Minds, the Scottish band Simple Minds. And Simple Minds didn't want to sing this, and they thought it sucked.
Right.
And there's the part end that's now iconic where he goes, la, la, la,
yeah.
la, la. When they were recording that, he was doing that as a fuck you joke to the
right.
song
and
because he thought the song was so silly and could, you know, was like, we'll think of lyrics later for this part,
yeah.
but I'm going to sing la, 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 la. And that's the part we all remember now.
It's such a good part. Yeah.
Similarly, I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, One Song. They were talking about Radiohead's Creep. And that was a song that they didn't want to record as well.
And they didn't even want to put it on the album.
Their biggest
so
hit.
What don't we want to do a podcast about?
Yeah,
right
I know.
Now? We should just do that.
Yeah,
that'll
just
work.
Do that. Do that. Yeah.
Somebody force us to do something, please.
Oh, that was what an energetic way to open the show. Apologies to Stu. That song is your song is great. Sound the alarm. We love it.
Yes, yes.
But it's hard to compete with Simple Minds and Dene, You Forget About Me. Yeah, so we'll get to The Breakfast Club later in the meat of the show, but there are some things that have been going on in the world that we wanted to talk about.
Well, speaking of Don't You Forget About
yes.
Me.
Yes. Oh.
I hate to be the one to break this to everyone. O.J. Simpson died.
Oh, God. What a hey, come on. What a gut punch.
Oh, no.
What a gut punch.
Oh.
I mean, when it was there ever a headline that you saw with a like such a combination of like bemusement and like good riddance?
Yeah, like karmic good riddance.
Well, it was also so anticlimactic because we didn't know he was sick or,
yeah,
you know, so there
true.
Was no march up to it. But it has been interesting and in a way fun. I hate to use that word
yeah.
given the context of the trial, but to revisit that era and that trial and sort of remember
yes.
everything about it. And one thought that occurred to me that I can't believe I didn't have until now is that, of course, the iconic moment in the trial is he puts the gloves on.
Yes.
Yeah.
The gloves are tight.
Mm-hmm.
His lawyer, Johnny Cochran, says, if the gloves don't fit, you must acquit.
Great line.
Point. It is possible to murder people in poor fitting clothes. Why did no one say that? Why did they not get up and go, murderer's clothes don't all fit perfectly, guys? They're not wearing like tailored suits and like making sure everything works. In fact, if you're going to murder someone, you take an old pair of gloves. Maybe you take your wife's gloves and you go, I'm going to be burying these later, throwing them off a bridge. Yeah. So I'm not going to wear the gloves that fit the best that are my best gloves. You're going to go, yeah. Oh, yeah. Here's these gloves. I wore them when I was younger. They don't really fit. Like, it proves nothing. You go, well, his shirt was too snug. He couldn't have dug the hole where he buried her. Like, what are you talking about?
Oh, it was just what a simple so time. Talk about simple minds.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The jury.
You go, no. The glove is slightly too tight, so he couldn't have worn it. Like, he could have.
I think it sounds like Al Pacino reacting to those lawyers making you put on that glove. Yeah, that was, you know, it's so funny because you say it puts you back in that time, yes. Which it totally did. And so one of the first things I did after he died was I started rewatching that great Ryan Murphy American Crime Story.
Oh, I never saw it.
You never saw it, JC?
No.
It's fantastic. It's on Hulu now. It is so, it's maybe even better watching again. It's amazing. And Goldie, I know, and this is something that you would just really sink your teeth into, going into the trial. So we see a lot of the preamble and going into the trial, and you focus in on obviously Marcia Clark and the DA's office and kind of what they're doing over there. They had so much physical evidence. They had so much incriminating evidence on OJ. It was an absolute slam dunk for them and their cocky attitudes going in. And then it's like, you know that quote, Goldie, they just forgot about Larry Bird. Like, they forgot about Johnny Cochran. They got so bodied in this trial. It was literally like when we watched our husband and wife friends play flag football and the wife just dominated the husband. Like, it was like that.
Yeah.
And there were these little moments in the trial that obviously happened. Like, none of it. That's the great thing about watching this show is that really none of it is dramatized. Like, this was all stuff that was on video.
Wow.
It was because the whole trial was, on TV.
Yeah.
There were two moments where Marcia Clark cried in court. There was one moment where she came in with a new hairstyle.
Yes.
And
I remember.
Yes. And Judge Ito, like, when she walked through the courtroom and could tell everyone was like kind of not digging it. And Judge Ito with the slam said, welcome, Miss Clark, I think. And like her face dropped and she started crying. And I was thinking to myself, like, there's no way you're winning this case. Like, you just, oh, God, it was so fun to watch.
Well, it's go ahead.
God damn it. I don't know why. And this is a bad instinct in me. I'm watching the show. I'm fucking rooting for OJ and Johnny. I'm like, yes, you got them. They don't fit.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, I think it was also most people, as well as mine, introduction to what actually happens in court. And that's because I went to Columbia, and Columbia has this core curriculum, and it was based at the time on the quote classics, which is all like the Greeks, and
yeah.
You're reading Thucydides, and you're thinking about Plato and the Republic and Aristotle and what's right and integrity and Virgil, and then in the Iliad. And then you just go, oh, none of that matters.
Yeah.
First of all, it's super boring for like 95% of it. It's just a nightmare to be in this windowless room with people arguing these arcane things. And then no one thinks about these values or whatever. And that you just want to, like, your goal in life should be avoiding any participation in this on the jury side, on the trial side, on the attorney side. And that every judge that, like, what, like, why are we rising? For someone in a robe, like, it's just so it's just a guy
rising,
doing a job, but we're all like, oh, the judge, oh, we better rise for the judge, you know. And that was, I remember, that was one of the things that really turned me off of religion, was it was like, please rise, please. And it's like, so, like we have to, like, God's all powerful, create everything, whatever, whatever, anything. And then you go, we have to every week just read a bunch of like free verse poetry, kissing his ass like that. And we have to do it like very properly. And then and during certain up. Parts of the kiss ass thing, it's like, you got to stand up because that's what God's really, the thing who created everything. That's what he's spending all his time worrying about. And you just kind of go like this, none of this lines up. Like, why are we rising? It's a guy. And then you go, oh, we put your hand on the Bible. It's like, oh, you couldn't lie now. Just like the gloves. Oh, that couldn't be too tight. It's like, it's an illusion. It's all stupid.
Yes.
Because it's like this room where we tell the truth. Like, it's like, no, we don't. It's just a room.
Yeah. Well,
it's like budget.
Zuckerberg says that in the Social Network, which I love when somebody, you know, accuses somebody. So you're saying that person was lying in court? And he's like, well, I guess that's the first time ever somebody's lied in court. It's like, yeah. God, by the way, 50% of the time, they're probably lying. And on a side note, I always wanted for a courtroom to inject a little fun and say Paul Reiser instead of All Rise. But I don't know. I don't know if we can get that to catch on. He's not quite as popular these days as he would have been at that time during the OJ trial. That would have been a good joke.
Yeah,
then.
He was huge.
It wouldn't have been.
I knew. I was waiting for you to say that.
Give yourself so much credit.
That would have been a
it would have been like
back then. Paul Reiser.
What?
Paul Reiser. Oh. The Honorable Judge Placido is now in the building. Anyway, but watching Marsha Clark and Chris Darden develop their love story. Which was true.
That's real? Oh.
They started like hooking up during this trial. It's like, guys, focus on the fucking trial. Why are you?
I just remember the bags under her eyes.
Oh,
looking
too.
So just haggard. And it looked like someone who was losing. Yep. Like if you just saw a picture and you said, you don't know what this is. Who's winning? Who's losing?
Yeah. The guy in the $5,000 suit who looks like he just came out of the beauty parlor, or this bag. But you know what's a sad? It was a sad watching it now in our modern world. It was a sad reminder. There is a parallel to Trump winning. OJ being acquitted is a parallel to Trump winning the presidency. Both times, everyone decided, we don't like this woman more than we care about anything else.
Wow.
So with Trump, it was like, you know, yeah, we don't like Hillary. So we'll elect this guy. We don't care what he's going to do. And with OJ, it's like, yeah, we don't like you, Marsha Clark. So guess what? But this murderer is going free.
At the time, don't you think it was more about the Mark Furman tapes where he said, I've never used racial epithets. And they're like, here's a tape. And then it's like, well, now we don't trust anything you presented. That's what I remember the headline at the time.
Yes. Well, that
is and kind of agreeing at the time.
Well, the LAPD, this was
it was revenge for Rodney King.
It was an ultimate comeuppance for the LAPD, which has been like dirty and gross for a long time. And then people just kind of said enough. So in order to say enough, they had to set this clearly double murderer free. But you know what? Rest in power, Juice. Big guy.
Oh, I'm not joining that sentiment, but it's just sort of the last vestige of the pre-internet era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and it was the beginning of the 24-hour news cycle. And it was, you know, the beginning of, I mean, Court TV became a thing at that time. And
it was
crazy, crazy time. It was like the before 9/11, it was just the biggest deal that had ever happened.
It absorbed all day, every day, because I was in college. I remember this was all we did was watch.
Yep. I remember we were both probably at SNL when the verdict was read. I was in that office.
Wow.
That day. And I remember the verdict was read and people were so pissed. And the only guy who wasn't was the very famous longtime writer there, Jim Downey, who was running for a while, who just like taped the headline, you know, OJ not guilty, to his office door and would just go around and smile at people who were pissed about it. And like, because of course he was responsible with Norm MacDonald for just pumping out, you know, OJ's guilty jokes week after week after week.
And our friend Ian Maxtone Graham.
That's right.
Oh, sweet.
That's right. They provided some of the best jokes that you'll ever hear. You should go back and listen to Norm shitting on OJ, as they say on YouTube. But yeah, so end of an era. closing of a chapter. Always a little sad. That was fun to talk about. Something else fun to talk about, which I did not expect when I woke up this morning, was to find an email from my Chartable Digest about this podcast. Ooh. To find that we are number 92 in Denmark.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how we did it. I don't know why it's happening.
Denmark.
But, you know, it's funny. Right when that happened, I wanted to send word to the people of Denmark how much we appreciated that. So I Googled how to say, you know, how to say hello in Danish. So here we go. You'll be surprised by the results. Here it is.
Hi.
There it is. Now click on the other one, the top one. Hello.
Hello.
There That's, we go.
Hello. So,
what hi, a treat for them.
Hi and hello to the people of Denmark. How could we have ever figured out how to say that? I looked up some fun facts about Denmark. Maybe Lars Ulrich, Metallica drummer, Danish. Kierkegaard.
Yes.
Which is a name that, you know, I love to throw around at cocktail parties, knowing nothing of what he said. He's also Danish. Hans Christian Andersen.
Oh, heard of him.
And his creepy childhood tales, Danish. The highest elevation in Denmark is 550 feet. Not very high. It's
really
a flat country.
Wow, I thought that was a mistake.
But and also the happiest place on earth,
right.
Denmark.
That was voted. And
that's
right.
Why they love Goldie, obviously.
I somehow feel dumber for having listened to you.
See, they're responding to Goldie's warmth and sunshine, which is why in Denmark they say, this is happy show. Listen to these disgusting people.
I spent Christmas in Denmark.
In Copenhagen.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Maybe that's why.
That's yeah, you that's spread a little charting. Joy there. It was all the flyers you handed out.
Now, is this overall podcast or comedy? Or
no, it's just comedy.
Writing.
It's just comedy.
Oh, okay. Wow. Just comedy.
But still, you know, so long, Yemen. Hello, Denmark. And basically, I think we'd all be happier taking a trip to Copenhagen than to whatever
Copenhagen.
Is in Yemen.
People in Yemen may be having internet and infrastructure issues.
Oh, really?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. That's also possible.
Let's just wait and see how that
we'll
develops.
Wait and see if they come back once they patch up those lines.
Well, Mocha yeah. comes from there. There's some of the best coffee in the world, apparently, is from Yemen. Mocha.
Now my phone is deciding to play it just randomly. That's great. This is, I feel like my mom.
No, she knows how to use this stuff.
She doesn't, goddammit. I have to hear about it every day. Goldie, I wanted to, before we get into Johnny jokes, I wanted to see if you had we had some news in the Golden Bachelor verse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you wanted to circle back, take a victory lap here.
Yeah, so Jerry Gary and Teresa are getting divorced. And I think she's a pretty sharp cookie.
Yeah.
I mean, as I pointed out on the show, they went on two dates.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then he did a home visit to her. And then finally, I think after being in Costa Rica with her, or no, maybe it was, no, it was before they went to Costa Rica.
Okay.
So they went on two dates. And then he finally got around to saying, so what do you do? And she mentioned that she was in some sort of investment.
Yep.
And
yes.
I mean, we literally watched his pupils turn into dollar signs
yeah.
on camera like a Looney Tunes cartoon. And then clearly, you know, as Leslie pointed out, something shifted. I don't know what. But I mean, first of all, thank God he never got his grubby mitts on Leslie ever again.
I know.
Thank God.
For real.
Because she's great.
Yeah, she's
but
lovely.
I think also Leslie did some things to try and win his heart and is now very big mad.
Well, it's also going back to this. If you had told me Leslie somehow lost a sex contest to Teresa, I would have just been bewildered as to how that had happened. But you don't know.
But now
it just
you
goes
know.
To show you don't know.
Yeah.
But so anyway, clearly Teresa, you know, spent a day on this crappy Indiana lake with this boar.
Totally. Narcissistic boar.
No, I am not doing this.
Yeah.
And good for her. I called it right away with him. Yeah, I was on it well before everyone else, even before the articles saying that, you know, he wasn't quite who he said he was and he was the golden janitor, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, yeah. So yeah. I know what I'm doing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think you called a murder, if I remember, but you were close.
I didn't. I never said that. I just said, I don't know. I mean, this all seems, none of this lines up to me.
Yeah.
No, you were right about that. Yep. You were right about that. And by the way, 3 months. So suddenly my first marriage is looking like we stuck it out.
Yeah.
We stuck it out.
You really hung in there.
How long was your first marriage?
What's that?
How long was your first marriage?
It would be like if you saw it on a little math thing, there would be that little minus sign and the number one. So it was like under a year.
When was the first time divorce got mentioned? How long into it?
Oh, what do you think of my memory, Goldie? Do you know how much pot I've ingested since that time?
Or did you just block it out?
Forget about before it. I don't remember when it first came up. I think it came up when we
on your wedding day.
It came up, the problem started on the honeymoon, for sure.
Had you ever seen the problems before the honeymoon? Were they new problems or were they?
They were new. They seemed like new problems. It was all just weird. A terrible awakening.
Did it involve you wanting to get out and go do stuff?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of. But part of the reason, and this is just a little inside baseball detail. So on the wedding night, my ex-wife was sick, like had a stomach bug. And I think a few people had that there. It was a great, great event. So so I have a blushing and diarrheaing new bride.
It sounds perfect.
And it was
for
just,
you
know, she was going through it for a couple of days, clearly had the stomach bug. So then we go to Paris and then I have the stomach bug.
Oh no.
But somehow I am not given the grace for the stomach bug.
Right.
She was. And that led to like a gross and not great honeymoon.
Gross.
I didn't plan on talking about this today.
No, I asked you.
Love it.
I mean,
yeah. No, it was so I think we were in total like 10 plus months of marriage. And it all kind of fell apart when we were hanging on by a thread at the end and we had made like a date to go have dinner and we both went to the wrong place.
Ah,
weird.
I have to say, if you don't have kids and you can't get along, then like there's something really wrong.
Because
that's true.
If you can just do whatever you want, largely outside of the time of your job, and you just don't find stuff to do and any spark, then like it's over.
Yeah.
That's a very good point.
It is, and that was certainly the case.
Yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
All right. Well, on that depressing note, let's ramp right in to Johnny Jokes.
From Hollywood, home to the legendary O.J. Simpsons, here's Johnny.
Yes. Love getting O.J. in the show. Well, maybe you heard about this story. An 85-year-old woman who finally went on her dream safari was trampled to death by an elephant who charged her vehicle.
Oh.
On the plus side, a manila envelope is much cheaper than a coffin.
Oh.
She was flattened. Hey, and here are my scientists. A new study in the American Journal of Medicine reports that throat phlegm is your body trying to send you a message. Mm. The message? You're Jewish.
Yeah.
That's an easy one. And we've got a theme for the last three here, which was unintentional. The German government summoned Iranian ambassadors for a closed-door meeting after Iran's attack on Israel. No word on what was discussed, but shortly after it began, the Iranians asked for a pot and a kettle.
Oh.
Mm. A pot and a kettle.
Yeah.
They were saying, don't you tell us Germans what to do. Yeah, okay. All right. And finally, another happy one. The 1968 killing of a milkman who was also a Holocaust survivor has finally been solved by DNA. Ironically, it was the cow.
Oh.
The cow? Oh, they killed him?
Yeah, because he was a milkman.
Oh, Dick. Oh, wow.
The cow. Da cow.
Christ.
The cow.
No, I got
okay. There we go.
A Paul Reiser? You cast a Paul Reiser.
The honorable second Johnny is now in session.
Right, here we go. Well, I'm sure you all heard the big news this week. O.J. Simpson has died of prostate cancer.
Ooh.
He gone!
But cancer is now claiming it spent that night with Kato Kaelin.
Ah!
Who knows? A new survey of doctors says that the healthiest sleep position is on your back.
Mm.
The least healthy sleep position is next to Diddy.
Oh!
Excellent. Excellent.
Okay. A New Jersey teacher is in jail after allegedly having sex with one of her students. She's doing okay in custody. There are 5,000 high school kids trying to arrange conjugal visits.
Oh, that's a lot.
She puts out.
Earlier this week, Arizona upheld a law banning abortion from 1864, which is crazy because people in Arizona are the cause of most abortions.
Oh, wow.
And finally, according to a new poll, 65% of voters are now skeptical about democracy. Why'd they vote in the poll?
Great. Great. Classic Goldie turns
great.
Of phrase. You know what? We kind of blew it by not doing an OJ joke as Norm.
Yeah.
Nah. Mm. All right.
Mm. Who cares?
Okay. I don't care. Fine. Sorry, I brought it up.
In 2002 or 2003, I flew to the Super Bowl to do a series of remotes for Craig Kilborn with our pal Mike Gibbons.
Nice.
And we went to what was at the time the famous Super Bowl party, which is the Maxim Super Bowl party.
Right. I could see
and of
that.
Course, it's all these celebrities and VIPs and us. So we don't know anyone. And we're kind of like hanging out, not feeling too cool. And then a guy comes up to us. And I joked with Mike, we should stay together because people will recognize us as Goldie and Gibby.
Duo.
From the Kilborn show.
Yeah. Name a more iconic duo.
And sure enough, a guy comes up to us and he's like, Gibby, Goldie?
What?
And it's Kato Kaelin.
What?
Who does watch the show. And
classic Kilborn demo.
Yep. And so I spent, and Mike as well, we spent an hour talking to Kato, having the most delightful conversation. And he was funny and smart.
No.
And I walked away going, I get it. This is a really good friend. I would let this guy stay in my guest house and I would hang out with him every night. He's awesome. So I just wanted to
that's
say.
That's great.
That
a brush
cool.
with Kato. Yeah.
That's
amazing. So you had a personal.
People were like, oh, the hanger on. Who is this guy? And yeah. You know what he is? He's a great guy. He's good friend.
Good hang.
That's the secret.
I love it. What a great personal
it's an
story.
Inside story. Yeah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So this week, I'm super pumped about this. This is going to be awesome and totally tubular. So JC had this great idea that because, and I had been seeing this online as well, it was just a couple weeks ago, the actual 40th anniversary of the date of the Breakfast Club detention. It was like March 24th, 1984, something like that. Yeah. So JC had this idea that we should talk about the Breakfast Club. We're all Gen X. That was a big movie for the three of us. Well, we'll get into it. A big movie for the three of us. It was certainly a big movie for me.
And me.
So today we're going to talk about The Breakfast Club, John Hughes' classic 80s film. I'll get started. Boy, do I love this movie. I've said this several times, but I feel like it's timeless to me. It feels like if you just change a little bit of the language and obviously the costumes and the look, right, you could set this in pretty much any era. I also feel like it should be a play. I don't understand why it's not a play at like every high school in America, because, you know, given today, you could cast it with diversity. Like, that doesn't matter.
Right.
I just so enjoyed watching it. I've seen it 100 times and I could watch it 100 more. I loved it. So JC, thank you for this gift of getting to watch it
for you.
Just for work. I'm watching The Breakfast Club for work. But Goldie, I'm interested.
No. Go to JC, because I want to hear what JC, this movie meant to you, JC, and why, and your feelings. Clearly, you have strong feelings for it, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing it when I was in high school. And it came out in 85, right? Yep. So that was my freshman year in high school. It was so important for me because I was still trying to figure out my identity as a high school student. I went to a pretty much all white high school, except for a few people from different neighborhoods that would come into town. And then there was like 3 Asian families that lived in Mill Valley at the time. So it helped me sort of, even though there wasn't anybody of color in this movie, it's still, these were all outsiders in their own way. And even the people that didn't look or seem like outsiders, they had similar struggles that I had. And I loved Molly Ringwald. Like I loved John Hughes. I just felt like anything from this era was something that was important to me. And I felt like the acting was excellent. Even on the rewatches, I cried whenever they cried. It just really hit home for me in many aspects.
Yeah. Well, I have many similar feelings, but now I'm interested what our third party has to say about this classic.
It should be called OK Boomer the Movie.
Oh, come on.
Come on, man. It's... I didn't see it when it came out. I've explained on this podcast before, I didn't see any movies growing up. So I saw it for the first time maybe in 2002 when I had a Netflix subscription. I felt like I'd heard about it and had to watch it. Obviously, I was kind of aware of it at the time, but didn't see it. And then I saw it last night. And I looked it up, and sure enough, John Hughes was born in 1950. So he's 35 when this gets made. Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it's like I went to public school, and it was a school similar to this school. You know, the library in the school obviously is really nice.
Yeah.
My first problem was there's no such thing as detention where you're not allowed to read or do homework. I mean, that's crazy.
I thought that was weird, too.
Detention is you're reading and doing work.
But
and
I don't remember.
It would have been in a classroom. They're not opening the library. So right away, I was like, this is not real. The actors, they're all in their mid-20s. I mean, Ally Sheedy looked like a parent at my kid's school. so did Judd Nelson. So I'm not, for a second, I'm not like, these are kids.
There were two kids. Yeah. Okay. Molly Ringwald and Anthony Michael Hall.
Emilio Estevez is the big tough wrestler, and then they show him walking down the hall. Anthony Michael Hall is taller and bigger. So we just kind of go, okay.
Well, he had his growth.
Hey, they're weight classes, Goldie. Weight classes.
So it was hard for me to put myself into the mindset of the era because, again, having gone to public school, the people like Bender had no redeemable qualities. They were genuine fucking sociopaths who would not have opened up about their dad and, you don't know, and they burned my arm and you know, like, I mean, they would just punch you in the face because you were walking down the hallway.
Yeah.
They were like doing drugs and drinking at school. And so it's this sort of like milquetoast Hollywood version of like, well, when you peel away the layer, you know, there's something there. And
but even in those bad bullies you're describing at your school, there was something inside them. Know you're reducing them to total. So, but there's a reason
awful
they were
people.
Like that.
They wound up in
parents prison
as they should have. They give nothing to society. Terrible
down.
People. And toward the, you know, when, and again, going back to the okay boomer thing where it's like, well, you know, if they just smoked a little weed and then, you know, if that goth girl just got like a little makeup on and put a ribbon, she's actually good looking.
Yeah.
She could be totally salvaged. So I just felt there it was like really more a movie for parents in a way than kids. And like none of the kids stuff felt believable to me. I'm sorry. Like it just felt like they were at the end saying kind of like almost AI written speeches about youth at each other that were like totally contradicting each other from one second to the next of like, oh, fuck you, Bender. And then she's like having sex with Bender. It's like, what?
Then she doesn't have sex with him.
I think she does. I think that's the whole point is she says she's a virgin and then she has sex with him in the closet.
No, I think they just kiss.
She had sex. I think that's strongly implied.
Wow.
So those are my like kind of blanket reactions. And we can go through the movie more. But I want to say from the beginning now, and again, I'm 51. I should have seen it when I was, you know, 12 and didn't. My opinion, I'm sure, would have been different. Just from the beginning and this was a trope that used to happen and it's so now cringe inducing when like a screen shatters to show you like, look out, man.
Yes.
This is going to blow your fucking mind. It's like, dude, the screen just broke. Like, was anyone in the theater like, wait, holy shit, the screen.
Are you talking about
that's not made of glass. Broke like glass.
Special effects.
Like it was so.
JC, what are you gonna say? What are you trying?
Are you talking about at the beginning when it goes?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought.
The David Bowie quote.
And the
essay that wasn't close to the required 1,000 words.
Well, yeah, that was an intentional fuck
being read. So those are my initial gut reactions.
Oh my god, I just it's so interesting. You know, Goldie, it's funny because last week we did this thing which, you know, worked marginally well about trying to drive some people to YouTube by doing our top five on YouTube.
Yeah, I loved it. People are on there.
Yeah, but it's like just like anything on the internet. If you ask 5,000 people to do something, like 8 of them do it.
That's true.
But at some point we have to set up the three of us or watching Star Wars because you've never seen it. Like, I want to be next to you when you're shitting all over Star Wars because I know you will. And I know, by the way, it'll just make me mad that you weren't at Family Guy for the Family Guy Star Wars because they forced everybody to watch it, even if you hadn't. And some of the funniest jokes were from people who had never seen it and were kind of like, what the fuck is this?
But I thought the holdovers was extremely accurate to the school parts. Like, I felt, you know, when the kids were in the dorm together and the jokes were like, you know, what are those panties you're wearing? It's like, they're your mom, whom I'm fucking, who, like, that was what every joke was. Like, there, it seemed to really feel like less written by an adult in that situation, the kid parts, whereas this just felt like really baby boomerish to me, which is something I have kind of antennae for, that I like, I've come to hate everything baby boomers stand for. So like when it just is like, look man, we smoked weed, like I hate it. And like you know, the cool David Bowie said it best.
Wait, he said
the children that you creep on when you try to change your world, they're immune. They're immune to your consultation.
JC's got a good counterpoint to this, which I know as well.
Yeah, because Ali Sheedy apparently gave him that quote, right? Saying that, or it was either the song or the quote. Yeah. And so he decided to use that as the opening quote.
Yeah, I know you'll say that's even worse.
Yeah. Well, she was like 40 at the time. So
she was 24. 24. Yeah, it is
24. You know, so she's born in 1960. I mean, whatever.
But you know what's amazing? And you're highlighting this, and I do this as well, because we're the age we are. We're all over 50 here.
Yep.
And this movie came out when we were 12 or 14 or 13, whatever the case may be. And I still instantly go back to my 12-year-old self, like watching this movie where I see Bender and I'm like, there's an older kid, even though I'm 30 years older than he is now. Like I look at Bender and he still just seems like, oh boy, there's a scary older kid.
Yeah.
It just all works so well on me. And Goldie, as a writer, I think one thing maybe, and it'd be interesting to hear you tear this apart, but like one thing I appreciated certainly as a writer were the character introductions of them being dropped off. I thought was great. It showed you everything you needed to know about their family life before you got in there. I mean, obviously they explore that more, but it gave such a good nugget, that little drop-off moment that we've all experienced where you're being dropped off for some kind of punishment or something. Like that just really set the table very well for me.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah. There's one little thing.
There's one detail that I thought was funny, which was the Molly Ringwald character being dropped off in a BMW, which at the time was the fanciest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And now you just go like, literally everyone drives a
dime a dozen. By the way, that was John Hughes' car. That's in the trivia. His BMW was the one she was dropped off in.
It's funny.
But an interesting thing is, so Bender, Judd Nelson, he isn't dropped off by anybody, which tells you about his family. Like nobody cares enough to even drop him off. So he's walking there and he's doing that thing where he's walking straight at the building and a car, Ali Sheedy's car, comes and screeches to a halt. And it's almost like Bender doesn't react, but he does. Like the more I watch it, it's like, oh yeah, you flinched a little bit, dude. Like you're supposed to be like the tough guy, but you see him kind of adjust his step over, not trusting the stuntmen in that moment.
Did you guys have detention growing up?
Yeah, but
we had a version of it. Yeah.
No, I mean, you personally, were you in detention a lot?
I don't think I ever got detention. I know my sister did.
No, I was always able to weasel my way out of shit.
How about you, Goldie?
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like I got it for mouthing off. I mean, not frequently, but I definitely had it at times. A handful of times.
Was it Saturday for you?
No, that was after school.
After school.
No one's coming in on a Saturday. Yeah. That was the other thing is that I wanted to mention is, you know, being older, that I would be more interested in a movie that's about these teachers that have to come in on a Saturday and watch these kids. And you go, that's worse than what the kids have to do. That like, how are you the one that has to do this? And like, what's your home life like? And like, I think you could make a companion movie. You know, now you would have to, because everything has to be, you know, its own universe, that you would just have to go to Mr. Vernon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You would have to go like Dick Vernon, the movie. And it's like what he led to him going in on that
being
Saturday.
The Verniverse.
Oh.
Yeah. And that actor, by the way, he could have easily been one of our that guys.
Yes.
His name is Paul Gleason. And he was in like Trading Places and a bunch of 80s stuff. Die Hard. He was one of the asshole cops in Die Hard. But I was reading up on him. Not only was he like a talented actor, obviously, but he was a singer and a poet.
Wow.
So good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him,
so
Mr.
Deep.
Gleason.
I mean, were we supposed to think he was the worst? Because he seemed fine.
I know. You're so on the side. It's so interesting. You're against the boomers, but you're on the side of the adults in this thing.
Well, The whole thing, again, it doesn't make sense that there's no detention where you don't, you're not allowed to move. Like, it's not like, you know, Superman going on trial or whatever, and you then go into that in weird purple ring. Like, you're allowed to do, you're supposed to do work in detention.
I never would have guessed you to pull that Superman trial reference, but I love it. Yeah, well, so let's get past that, because I mean, for me, it was just like, who the hell knows what goes on at other schools? Maybe this was the way they did it. I don't know.
In the 50s when it John Hughes made it new.
Of yours, Teach. How funny was it that Bender tells him to eat my shorts?
And I know.
That's the insult Simpsons that gets him eight weeks of detention. And I love that little detail of Anthony Michael Hall was clearly counting along, and he's like, that's seven, including the time you asked him if he switched wardrobes with Barry Manilow. He's like, that's eight. He's like, excuse me, sir, it's seven. Like, he's so sure of
himself. He was so funny. I found him
also,
really
is Barry
funny.
Manilow known for wearing a suit?
Well, he was,
it was like not even an insult.
A disco suit guy, you know, in the late 70s, he was sort of a like almost like a Travolta disco suit kind of thing.
Gotcha. That's a good question, though.
I mean, it just felt like the teacher would be like, yeah, you're wearing a bandana as a shoe. What are you talking about?
I'm going to start doing that.
Having the way the characters came in and sat down again was also great. You have Ally Sheedy isolating herself in the back because she's the weirdo sort of loner. You have the two popular kids sitting at the same table, the athlete and Molly Ringwald. By the way, Molly Ringwald, God, she was beautiful. Like, and she still is.
So
she looks kind of the same. But I was looking at her and I'm like, oh my God, her lips and her hair. It's insane.
And
like,
just so
it was like just like really cool looking at her.
You just follow her around the country like Jason Sudeikis.
Oh, you got him again. You got him again.
Oh, he's just a fan and he has daughters and she's a good
he's
role
just
model.
A Ringwald fan. He's always been a Ringwald fan.
If anyone with daughters, we were obligated to follow prominent young women around the country.
Anyway,
hashtag girl dad.
Hashtag girl dad. Yeah. So Molly Ringwald was beautiful, and she was actually 16 at the time, and there were some issues with that. Apparently, there was the scene where Bender goes down below the table, and it's implied that he's kind of like, what is it, that he's eating her out? Like,
no, he's just looking. Was that a stunt crotch?
It is a stunt crotch.
It has to be, right?
Because, you know, like, there's a great opportunity. There's a great opportunity for, like, now, of course, if we were to do it, there would be red pubes for sure.
Coming out the side.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, why a not? Ton. Like, just poorly
way
kept.
Too much.
Yeah. Whoa.
I guess, I wonder.
Because you're doing multiple takes anyway. I would be like, can we have one where there's just like a ton of red pubes? And just see how he reacts. Don't tell Judd we're doing it.
Yeah, just do one where it's literally like the Elmo doll down there. yeah, so that was, you know, it was interesting reading about this because Molly Ringwald and Anthony Michael Hall had worked with John Hughes a few times before this. But this was the last time that they worked together because this film, The Breakfast Club, was so successful that both Molly Ringwald and Anthony Michael Hall felt like, okay, we're done with the teeny bopper stuff and we'd want to do more serious stuff. And John Hughes never forgave them for it. Like, it was a big rift between them.
Well, one thing I wanted to bring up that I was interesting to me that, you know, because people always ask, well, why don't we do something like this now? I mean, the time is just as ripe as timeless, whatever. But at the time, there was this sort of, and prior to this, there were known ensembles of teen actors who were avatars for teens. Like, you know, when you look at The Outsiders, it's like all those guys in that. And then these actors, it was like there was almost a known teen troupe of like John Cusack and Curtis Armstrong was kind of like adjacent to that playing Booger.
Yeah.
And that those people seem to have gotten like vacuumed up into the Nickelodeon universe and the Disney universe subsequently. Like, you know, it became more Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake and Ryan Gosling. And then, all those Nickelodeon people. And that there aren't really these actors who are sort of trained actors also known to be good on film who are the ages or play the ages of those kids in a known in a way that's known to us. Similarly to how I talked in an earlier episode about Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson.
That right.
Right.
It just seems like that's been lost a little bit through social media with TikTok personalities, et cetera, that I don't know who that known ensemble would be today you know, kids, like, actors who were other kids would see themselves in, like, obviously, like
the Brat Pack.
I see a John Cusack on film and I really relate to
that. It's interesting that you keep bringing him up, John Cusack. It's interesting because he was originally cast in the Judd Nelson role. He was, he was going to be the guy. Yeah. Because John Cusack is too likable in, in some respect. Like there's too much of like a wounded nature to John Cusack, which helps him as an actor. But he was going to be it. And then somehow at the last minute, they arrived at Judd Nelson, and John Hughes also hated Judd Nelson. Like they had a terrible time, on this movie, but it's, what was it? JC? Do you remember?
He would do things like he would stay in character. Like he would he was bullying Molly Ringwald, and like, he just never left character. He would pick fights with everybody, and he was very annoying.
It worked, by the way, it worked. Yeah. See, that's the interesting thing about these like feuds that you hear about. You only hear about them in the movies that were very successful, because that's more interesting.
Right.
Like, nobody cares if somebody was feuding on a movie that bombed.
Right. Like Kubrick and
whatever Judd Nelson was doing worked. Go ahead.
I always wondered, the one I heard about where Daniel Day-Lewis stayed in character as Abraham Lincoln. Did he have his wallet, you know, like when he was driving onto the lot and they were like, ID, driving. And he's like, identification, I'm, you know, Abraham Lincoln. And was he like riding in on a horse-drawn cart? And like, it's such a ridiculous, dumb thing that you go, I understand if between takes, you don't want to lose it.
I know, that hard. It's weird. Like, I always got creeped out by that when people said that about Jim Carrey as Andy Kaufman. Like, oh, he never left Carrey. It's like, that's a double nightmare.
Yeah.
It's like you have Jim Carrey, who's already kind of like a lot to deal with, and now you're going to be Andy Kaufman every second. It's like, oh boy, get me off that set.
Yeah. It's like, how much character? You wear the trench coat, you have a couple earrings, and you're a dick. It's not like rocket
science. By the way, that character is much more realistic to be in than Abraham Lincoln. You know, it's like you're closer to that than you are.
I guess, but when you're 25 or something, as he was, it just seems very stupid.
Yeah, but listen, you didn't think so because maybe you didn't see the movie at the right time. But for me, his performance in that is like, that's the thing. Like, if you know how in football they go back and they say, if you could redraft the class of 2007 or 2000, who would you pick first? Like, I think we should do a thing where we re-Oscar certain years. Like, I think Judd Nelson should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actor. I thought he was great.
Who got it instead, you know?
Was he even nominated?
What was that, 85? It might have been Michael Caine and Hannah and Her Sisters. It was right around then. I mean, he wasn't going to beat Michael Caine.
No,
because he doesn't do the broken voice. He doesn't do the broken voice.
Well, it wasn't back then, riven by years of brandy and cigars. It hadn't dropped yet.
And now you can hear in the throat the brandy and the cigars. Master
Wayne. I have the answer.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's from The Killing Fields.
Oh, Dithpran.
Hang S. Noor. Dithpran, yes.
Dr. Hang S. Noor played Dithpran in the Killing Fields. Yes, I remember that movie that everyone said that they watched, but I'm sure nobody really did.
It was a Hang S. Snore, says this reviewer.
Says this reviewer.
Hang S. Snore. I bet he's never been slammed like that in his life. Oh my God.
It's a joke for nobody.
Oh, well, that's a joke for
like
us.
Like an orphan joke.
And we laughed.
It's a Ronin. It just wanders the countryside looking for anyone to
love. A joke with no master. A Ronin joke. Okay. So Hang S. Noor might have beat our friend Judd Nelson, but he certainly should have been nominated. I thought he kind of carried the energy of the movie.
Well, JC, what's your favorite part of this movie? I mean, do you have a favorite part, or is it just the experience of seeing it when you were 13? It's sort of a manual to, like, was it a manual to sort of decrypt what was going on in this high school where you felt like an outsider?
No. Well, it was not a manual. It was more like I felt seen and understood more. Like,
but who were you relating to?
Well, I related to three different characters. I related, I don't know if you'd even be able to guess, but I related
Molly Ringwald.
Anthony Michael Hall.
Yes. And who's the third?
Maybe Ali Sheedy. Maybe.
No, Emilio Estevez.
Yes.
Because you were an athlete.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so those three, but also there's a little bit of Ali Sheedy. I not in a way that I was like, I related to it, but it was also like, I liked her character.
Yeah. That was Parmesan cheese, by the way, is her dandruff, not her dandruff when she's scraping her hair. It was Parmesan cheese. I want everyone to, I don't want to do Ali dirty like that.
I was wondering if they, you know, not having seen it in a while, and it wasn't like, she had sort of the most convenient spectrum disorder. Like now you just look at these kids and it's like, they're not talking. And you go, well, it turned out to be a little bit of a different take on it, but.
Right. But
like
you're
going
right.
in, I was like, oh, right. Because we had no language for this. So I used to be in class with kids who were, you know, now we would just say they had autism
on the spectrum
or whatever. Yeah. But back then it was like, they're just really
they're
weird. They're oddballs.
Yeah.
They make loud noises all day. Like I sat next to someone who ticked all year in third grade, and like,
whoa!
By the end, I was like shell shocked. I was just like,
am I gonna
banging on
now?
Your desk and like,
right,
your knee on the as a public school.
I'm shocked that the Cap'n Crunch sandwich didn't catch on. That looked good to me when she was eating it. I mean, the pixie sticks part of it, I wouldn't have done. Maybe you put peanut butter on the bread and Cap'n Crunch in there. That's a hell of a
That felt thing. True because there was a kid on our street who would eat ketchup sandwiches like that. The weird food stuff I do remember.
But did that kid grow up in the Depression? What was the cause
of that? No, he just was like really particular about food.
Yeah.
But one thing that, you know, because I guess I would have been the Anthony Michael Hall character. Maybe we can all go around and say who we were closest to. So that was sort of who I was, I guess you would say, where it was like the person who was getting good grades under a lot of stress, you know, kind of depressed. But this got me angry was that, of course, so the reason he was there is he was in shop. And then he had this lamp and the lamp didn't light. Now, I took shop. Okay.
You don't build lamps in shop.
You don't build the electronics. The electronics is a unit that you just put into whatever vessel you build, and then it works. And if it doesn't work, you got a faulty electrical component, and no one's dinging your grade on that. You're not fucking like working in a factory soldering shit together from its component parts. Like, fix something else. Like, that just isn't, that's not how shit is built.
Oh, God.
That wouldn't have happened.
Unbelievable. I love it.
But that's so who would you have been in this?
Me?
Who, Alec?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking of that. I don't really relate to any of them. Like, if anything, like, I'm trying to go through. I wasn't a good athlete. I wasn't, you know, the girls are out. I wasn't a good student. And I wasn't a fucking rebel bully. Like, I wasn't
popular,
any of
though?
These
characters. That's
what's
a
that?
Better character.
You were popular.
What's that?
You were popular.
Well, yeah, but like popular and like the class clowny type guy. Like, there was no one like that there.
That would have been a good character for that.
Yeah, you're
movie.
Right.
It's sort of the class clown and going like, why are you always joking?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why can't you be serious? Like, well, I'm scared of
I'm scared.
Really
I'm scared.
Because I had an injury when I was 5. Dr. says I broke my back.
I ain't going to joke again.
Yeah, but I mean, that's to me why it did feel a little underbaked at certain points that the character types were so archetypical and obvious to me that, you know, it does feel like if we pitched for 10 minutes on slightly more specific characters.
Oh, yeah, you'd have to now.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to.
And I mean, it was so, you know, like it was so long ago. And the awareness of diversity was so little that even the janitor was white in this. Like in the 90s, yeah, they would have, you know, definitely had like the character in Rudy who's been watching it all, who's like, yeah, I've seen it all, son, and let me tell you, you know, like, but they didn't even have the insight into like demographics to do that. Like, it's like, well, obviously he's white too. Yeah. So it's like that, you know, it's just the lack of anything other than these white people is sort of with this movie, like the elephant in the room, where you kind of go,
well, yeah.
Like, but again, and in any kind of update, you could, it's easy to make
right.
Yeah, it's easy.
But it
to
does.
Add.
It should count against it a little bit because it's not like those people didn't exist back then. Like
it's true.
I mean, when not I went to
in,
high school,
in movies they didn't. Yeah,
not as not they did, but not as much. But it's it, you know, like certainly the school I went to, which was again, I think pretty similar suburbs of Boston, suburbs of Chicago, like.
Yeah,
all different kinds of kids, and they and you it, that part of it to me, even back then, I think you would have kind of gone, this feels a little weird.
Yeah,
like it really did.
Well, I'm sure you'd have a lot of executives agreeing with you today.
Yeah,
about
I mean, I don't think they'd be wrong. I mean, I think even for the time, it felt like so, it feels just odd.
Do you think
go ahead, JC?
Do you think that this movie could get made today with updates, or do you think no one would be interested in making this movie?
Oh, I think it could absolutely be made, but I think Goldie's
so cheap.
Yes, it's a bottle show, and which means like it takes place all in one room.
Yeah,
but Goldie's point, I think from earlier, is more pertinent to why it can't get made today. It's just where are those five or six teens or young 20 actors who are going to do it? I mean, I'm sure they're out there, but we just, like Goldie said, you go into this movie, you knew Molly Ringwald, you knew Anthony Michael Hall, you knew Emilio Estevez, you knew Judd Nelson. Like, it's like you knew all these people, and they were credibly our generation, at least.
I think it'd be easier to make today, if anything, because like you would just go, you know, the Anthony Michael Hall character, you would just go, he's like, he's Asian. His parents are putting this incredible. He's been dragon mommed, whatever. I mean, it's like in 5 minutes you could update the characters.
Yes,
so
in a
easily.
Way that would make sense. And like, you know, the Molly Ringwald, it's like the dad was some crooked investment banker, and it's like
they're putting
on the appearance of being rich, but they don't even have the money anymore, and there's debt and all this stuff. And
look at him go.
It just is. I think if anything, it's easier because there's just more awareness of different types of people, and like it could be done in a gratifying way.
Would it be a movie or a TV show?
It's a movie.
Oh, pretty strong.
Because you don't actually want to see them the next Monday because you know it's bullshit. They're not going to be friends.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's a detention. That's true.
Right. Well, to get back to you were asking favorite parts of the movie. For me, and it's always been, and you just sort of highlighted it in a negative way, but I love that scene where the camera's going around them and they're
me
all
too.
Talking about why they were there that week. That scene makes me very emotional. I love the Emilio Estevez speech. I think
that's
unbelievable.
Oh, so fake.
No,
there's not a bully
improv.
In the world who thinks about the humiliation. I mean, I hated that. As someone who was bullied, it's like, no, they didn't
you
have any
know.
Remorse.
You don't know.
Oh,
you
I
are
feel
not
so bad.
There
I feel so bad for him thinking about my humiliation. The poor guy.
Have you ever bullied anybody, Goldie?
I don't think I have.
Only,
I mean,
only with words.
I think I've been like mean to people.
Did
sure.
you feel guilty
but like,
afterwards?
I wasn't like highly. I guess maybe. That's a
you
tough
kind of
question.
You kind of bully me every week.
I think so. Though.
It's for the show.
Yeah, I think it's just no one wants to listen to a podcast where three people agree. I mean,
yeah, no, that's
on everything.
Absolutely
would be very
true.
Boring.
Absolutely true. But anyway, that scene for me, I get it. It didn't land for you. That scene totally works for me, and I feel like. It's honestly the scene that elevates the movie to great. Like, I think that the movie is really good the whole way. It's really enjoyable. I love watching it. But that scene, to me, it takes it to the next level where, okay, this is now, I'm watching something great. It's making me cry. Like, it's already made me laugh.
Do you think they, and because then they do the whole thing with the dancing, like, do you think they were like, let's just make this look like Footloose for the trailer?
Yes.
Kinda, yeah.
Well, yes. And I read a little bit about that apparently it was only supposed to be Molly Ringwald's character who danced, but she was so nervous about her dancing that she got the director to get everyone doing it. And you're 100% right. Like, I'm sure it was the part that everyone hated the most. But of course, the marketing people were like, this is going to be in every commercial for this movie. Because it was. Like, I remember the three of them kind of moving like penguins in a row there. That was in every
commercial. It's called a sideways moonwalk. But yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's awesome.
There he
I
is.
Didn't know that.
Fred Astaire.
I know how to do that.
Dead Astaire.
Fell downstairs.
Fell downstairs. there was a line that I remember from all the previews for the movie too, which is when Judd Nelson says, "Demented and sad, but social." Like they always put that in the Breakfast Club. But yeah, so I mean, as far as favorite moments, that emotional scene towards the end really did land for me. There were just so many things along the way though that I was loving. And I you know what I liked is how they did not shy away from like broad humor. And it doesn't seem like a movie that would have it or that you really remember it being in.
Right.
But there were a lot of jokes that they told in a broad way. Like when Ally Sheedy was doing weird stuff, they don't cut to everyone looking at her like,
right?
And like, that's a really like kind of old fashioned way to tell a joke of like somebody's weird. And they did that a few times throughout the movie, which actually made me like John Hughes more. It's like, okay,
there as much active obsession with who was a virgin when you were in high school? Like, I remember obviously like it's always on your mind, but I don't really remember sort of it being a vessel into bullying people by going like, it was something is like an insult. You'd call someone a virgin, but was that such,
I think even you just answered that a little bit, because I agree with you. It wasn't like a thing that if five people got together and they would start yelling
like,
at each other about. But you said
you haven't had sex.
But you said it. It was always on your mind. And and I think that's another thing. It's like they were talking about things that we were thinking about. So, I mean, I count that. I agree with you, but I also think that's. You know, it's a strength of the movie to be able to articulate what's on kids' minds.
And I'll also tell you, I was a young freshman, right? So I entered as a 13-year-old. I see this movie, and it just informed me thinking, well, people are. I need to hide. Like, I can't believe people are thinking about sex already. Like, it really kind of scared me into even talking about it with people because of this movie, because it felt so real.
Oh, well, that's not good.
But I mean,
that's kind of a black mark against the movie.
No, in a way, it was just like, when you ask me, were people obsessed with it? I don't really remember because the movie sort of put it in my head that was a thing.
I was telling a story in the room yesterday that I just remembered kind of on the spot that when I was 12 or 13, I was sleeping over this kid's house and he told me about anal sex. Like he explained it to me and I was like, absolutely not. That's not true. Like I was like, you're playing a joke on me. You've been misinformed. If that was true, I would have heard of it by now. So like people are not doing that.
That's so funny.
Like there used to little information. I mean, I remember literally like looking up sex in the dictionary and stuff where you just kind of go like, I don't know.
Well, but you know, so it turns out you were right. Anal sex does not exist.
It doesn't. No one's, no one's actually doing
that's,
it.
That's a myth.
No.
Can't happen.
I would have heard.
Why would anyone do that?
Yeah.
I
so
heard.
Any other thought? Like I thought maybe like a not so great moment in the movie was when, Emilio Estevez screams and shatters the glass.
Yes,
and
I
that
want to talk about this.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Okay, because
you're the sound booth gal. So
but, yeah. Okay, but I want to. So when they all are getting high together, and it's just the way they portrayed how high people like how they act when they're high. When first of all, when Claire is like, "I'm so popular." It's you know, you guys don't even know. No one does that when they're high. That's like what you say when you're drunk. You get more like thoughtful. Then Emilio Estevez smoking pot and then acting like he's on PCP. Like nobody is like jumping around and like running on the walls and punching the air and then screaming till the things shatter. Like it's just not real. And that really annoys me every time.
In the remake, instead of breaking the glass, he's going to hit a brown note. And then everyone's going to shit their pants in my remake.
Yes.
Oh my God, the brown note. I remember that. It was available on YouTube. And there was one time I was constipated and I was like, I was too scared to listen to it. There's this thing, if you don't know, it's called the brown note that apparently you can listen to it and it makes you shit. But I wouldn't know because I was too afraid.
I want to write a symphony that's just brown notes.
I love it.
You somehow get everyone together. You just I'm conducting it like Bradley Cooper. And I'm just sweating, and
you come out in a clearly a puffy Depends diaper underneath your tuxedo pants.
Earplugs. I'm just wearing huge those things that the people who pack the luggage on airplanes wear.
But didn't John Hughes say that was his least favorite? Like, if he could go back and take something out of the movie, it'd be the
He said if he
glass.
Could go back and change anything, it would be the shattering of the... Not the shattering of the David Bowie quote, which was kick-ass. Kick-ass. Look out, effect. Fans. Look
and then
out,
the freeze... I mean, the companion piece of the freeze frame at the end of the jumping in the air is kind of
He
like...
didn't jump in the air. He held his fist in the air, which I love that moment. I consider that...
What is that? So what is it? It's just like, I had an awesome day. Like what is that?
I got a diamond.
That's just the 80s, man.
No, it's like, what does it mean? I mean, it's the last moment of a movie. What does it mean?
I'll tell you what it is.
Okay.
Ooh.
It's the tent pole of the 1980s. Judd Nelson is holding up the 1980s with his clenched fist.
Wow.
It's just a final note of defiance from this generation in this movie where we've watched them. I loved it.
But the guy wasn't saying like he was just like a paid employee telling him like they had to do this thing that's a school rule or something. And then,
shorts.
Tell an essay telling me who you each of you are. Like you could say like, I don't really know who I am. I mean, it's just not, I don't know. It just didn't seem like, the shock of being forced to say who you are.
Oh, God.
And then you go and like, I'm not who you think I am. It's like, well, I don't know who you are, which is why I asked for the essay. Like maybe he wanted insight into how to relate to them. Who are you? Tell me about yourself so that I can then know how to teach you better.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we're not people who you can put labels on. It's like the most boomer, like frustrating non-answer, non-information ever. Like, who am I? A person you couldn't understand.
Oh, okay.
So never talk about anything because it's all not understandable. It's so frustrating.
Bender's fist in the air was the spinning top from the end of Inception.
Oh,
didn't see
wow.
That. You didn't see that?
Even no. I saw that.
Wow. I felt like that would be a movie you'd be all over.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just have kids. I just miss. I don't ever have 2 hours, 48 minutes. I don't have that.
Yeah, I don't either.
I guess. Yeah. Well, that was good because The Breakfast Club was only like 90,
an hour and a half.
94.
Believe me, I was grateful. I watched Heart on an iPad at lunch yesterday and then I picked up the rest at home.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Well, so clearly mixed opinions here. JC and I seem to be in the camp of absolute 80s classic. Love it. Can't get enough of it. And Goldie comes at it from
as
a
Mad
angle.
Magazine might say, the Blechvest Club.
We can end on that, but maybe we have to because it's a funny joke. All right, well, that ends our discussion of the Blechvest Club. Now I'm sad that I will think of every time I think of that movie. But hey, you know, I brought up that thing about Star Wars earlier, and doing that for like a YouTube video. Obviously, that would take a little bit of doing and figuring out. But I think it's a good idea. And Franz fans, if you think that's a good idea, write to us at atypicaldisgustingdisplay@gmail.com, and maybe even suggest some things that if you want us to like watch something and you think Goldie would be pissed off by it,
if enough people would care, we could do a watch party you could sign up for and just not even do it as a podcast, but say like, we'll do it on, you know, 7:30 on a Wednesday or something.
Oh yeah. This isn't a podcast. This is bonus material.
Yeah. It's just fun. It's a fun hang.
JC's cringing already thinking about all the work. I saw you
did
the involuntary Tom Devine inhale.
Well, no, but she's not having to do any post on it or anything. It's just in that case, it's a Zoom.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm
saying it's a Zoom link, and if people want to join us
and then watch us watch Star Wars.
I think you do both. I think there's a Zoom link, watch us watch Star Wars, then you also craft something down to 30 minutes that's like the best moments. That's what they do on YouTube now, Goldie. I'm telling you, I'm the reaction video guy.
That's too much work.
Well,
that's
it's not. But let me let you in on a secret. It won't be you or me.
This could be something we could get Viet to do. I think he would like that. Yeah, I think he would be.
Now? Let's get right in to top five.
Top five.
All right. We had a change up in our top five based on today's episode featuring the Breakfast Club. So JC, this was your choice because this whole thing was your project. So what did you come up with for top five this week?
Okay. My Neo Maxi Zoom Dweeby.
Yes.
Top five songs from 1984.
There were so many to choose from. It was crazy.
Yes.
Crazy. All right, JC, start us off.
Okay. Number five, Shout by Tears for Fears.
Yeah, it's a good one. Good. Let it all out.
I like that more now than I did then. I didn't like it when it came out.
Oh,
I loved it.
Now I like it.
Songs from the Big Chair. Good album.
Yeah. Yes. Number four, Say.
How dare you? How could you go back and look at all those songs and pick
that
one?
I love that song.
Oh. Cheese fest. Okay, go ahead.
You should see it beat out a lot of songs.
How? I don't know.
I don't know. Number three, Hold Me Now, Thompson Twins.
I love that song.
Yeah.
Me too.
I love that song.
I've tried to remake that one on my own.
How'd that go?
It didn't go well. It sounds like a totally different song.
Maybe let's leave it to the twins.
Number two, Thriller.
Yeah. I found that was technically 83, but
no, but Thriller, the song, was released in January 1983.
Okay.
I had to Google it.
I enjoy the video more than the song personally.
Yeah. Oh, maybe I hear you.
I really like them both, but yeah.
But yeah, it's still technically 83 is what you're thinking. And my number one, which you probably would never agree with this, is Automatic by the Pointer Sisters.
I love that song.
It's like one of my all-time favorites.
I think Prince wrote that.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I think so, which is makes it even better. I love that song. No way to control it.
No way to control it.
All right. Here are my top five songs from 1984. Number five, I had a song called Tenderness by General Public.
I can't believe you have that on there.
I love that song.
That's one of my... I didn't think that was 1984.
I thought
that was 85.
I'm not sure I even know that song.
It's one of my favorite bands.
Where is the tenderness?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's one of my all-time favorite records.
I finally did a good vocal impersonation that we could recognize on here.
I know you do all the time.
Number four, Here Comes the Rain Again by the Eurythmics.
Oh, that's really good. Yes.
Love that song. Number three, Cruel Summer by Bananarama.
Oh, you love the Bananarama?
I love that song. Number two, Sister Christian by Night Ranger.
Oh, wow.
God,
that's my number six. I just eliminated that.
Oh,
God, I love that song. Yeah, I'm glad
you
considered it. And number one, and Goldie, I'll be mad if it isn't yours. We've talked about it before. Here it is again, kicking our ass. Panama.
Yeah, you're gonna.
It's not. It's not. I have something else.
That's all right. But let's hear it.
Man, I'm at six and I can't eliminate one.
Give us them.
Give us them.
Okay. So number six is Take On Me. I can't take it off the list though. Like it's too good.
It's a good song. It ruined that guy's voice.
Yeah. Really? So number five, Rocky Like a Hurricane by the Scorpions.
Oh. Awesome.
I mean, you can't. Number four. I guess that's why they call it the blues, which I'm shocked you didn't have, Alex.
I considered it. I do love that song.
Number three, Here's My Van Halen. Hot for Teacher.
Oh, that's great.
Number two, this is going to be controversial. Oh, Sherry.
I just got. I love that. I love that.
Yeah,
I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
I love that.
And number one is a song I just fucking love. Cyndi Lauper, Time After Time.
Yeah. Yuck.
Oh.
You're crazy.
Yuck.
You don't like it from the 80s, but if you listen to it now, it's
no,
so beautiful.
I can't stand it now. I don't like Time After Time. I don't like True Colors. I think Girls Just Want to Have Fun is a potentially actionable song. Like,
oh,
you
God.
Could sue that for libel. That's not true, that Girls Just Want to Have Fun. There's a lawsuit waiting to be had there.
Oh, my God.
And for me,
so
I do.
Wrong.
You know, it's funny. I do like Cyndi Lauper because I think she has a great voice. I think she has a way better voice than Madonna. And they were like at
oh,
the same
my
time.
God. Yeah.
And I love the song She Bop. I love, you know, All Through the Night. But I think her best moment of her career was Coming Over the Top and We Are the World.
Mm. Oh, that was pretty good.
But Time After Time.
I love that song.
I think it's a great song.
Yeah. Yuck. I love your list.
I mean, I the tough to eliminate, I just want to say honorable contention, You Might Thank the Cars.
Oh, wow.
Almost Paradise. I mean, that's
Mike Reno.
And then, because also Born in the USA came out that year, No Surrender, which I think is an incredible song.
I don't know that song. Was that a hit?
Well, we bursted out of class, had to get away from the school. And it's, you made a promise, so we'd always remember. No retreat to baby, no surrender.
That's awesome. Wow. Mesmerized. That was great.
I would also throw My Hometown in there. Ooh, was that good?
Oh,
also,
yeah.
Let's
and
hear
also,
it for the boy.
Pink Houses. I mean, just going through that list. That I mean, what a bonanza of a year. I mean, because we're not even talking about like 99 Luft Balloons or whatever,
right.
Which was also great.
Yes.
Yeah, and then some of the Prince stuff. I don't think anyone.
I've just heard it too much.
I've heard the Prince songs too many times now. All right,
it's a great suggestion, though.
So, great suggestion. Great episode suggestion. Thank you, JC.
Thank you.
Thanks. Goldie, so we were going to do it this week. Just remind the folks what we're going to do next week.
It's top five things you've never done. So
yes.
Is it never done
top
or
five memories?
Done.
These are things you intend to, would like to do, hope to do, but you've to this point not done them.
And appropriately, one of those things is that top five list, which I will get done by next show. And yes, before we get out of here,
you're being a real Helen cunt. You should probably cut that.
No, leave that in. How did you get that? That was for Helen Hunt.
Yeah, of course, because he said Paul Reiser.
Oh, there we go. There's the, now you got to
leave in the explanation.
Leave that in.
Of course.
And I think you found your final trail outline for the episode. You've been a real Helen Cunt.
And, but keep in the part because of Paul Reiser.
Because of Paul Reiser.
And then like
to doubly remind you.
Yeah, I jump up in the air.
Hey, hey.
Tear both Achilles.
He doesn't jump. He's just walking and he holds his fists up. He does jump. Bender, don't jump, man. So next week we are going to be talking to Fallon writer Arthur Meyer. He's a very funny guy, has hilarious videos on YouTube. So he's going to be here to talk to us about his journey. But yes, thank you all for listening. Thank you two for being awesome. Thank you, JC, for this excellent episode. And we will talk to you again next week.
The typical, typical, disgusting display.
Oh, tonight we got them. Goldie the Sulk and JC.
Spoiler alert.
Move on.
I have to go bathroom.
I got goosebumps just thinking about it.
You're terrible at what you're paid to do.
I love this.
The yellow, gutless way they do things here.
Saturday, March 24th, 1984.
It was a hang-ass snore, says this reviewer.
Mom, I got the job.
The Blechfest Club. You're being a real Helen Cunt. It's because you said Paul Reiser.